Formula Access, welcome. Today, we have a very special guest, a very personal guest to me, somebody that I've known for actually quite some time. I met through a mutual friend. I just have chatted to him over the last couple of months and just said, hey, you want to come on the show? And he's like, yes, let's do it. So Alex, thank you for coming on the show and thank you for giving us some of your time.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here. It's been good getting to know you over the years and excited to talk some racing. So happy, very wet weather and cold weather Friday here across most of the Midwest.
I think you're getting we have the snow coming through right now. So I think that might turn into something else, just in case you're worried about what's headed your way.
It is. I'm used to it though. I grew up in Western New York, so I'm used to quite a bit of it, and also you can tell from what I'm wearing, so go Bills. But no, excited to be here.
Well, good. So everybody, so I have had the pleasure of a friend of mine who's connected me with the Andretti family. We've had Mario on the show. They have always, you know, allowed me to be a part of their experience with Andretti, and I've always appreciated that. I've gotten to know some really, really, really neat people, and they are literally the friendliest people and the friendliest team I've ever come across in the years that I've been around motorsports. Alex is the head of strategic partnerships for Andretti. So thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for giving us your time and telling your story. So for all of those who don't know you specifically, get into a little bit of like what you do for Andretti. What does that title actually mean?
No, sounds good, Ryan. And yeah, Alex Moeller, strategic partnerships here. There's three of us in the U.S. on really the revenue side of what's now Andretti Global, seven different racing series where we compete around the world from IndyCar, which has kind of been the heart of our organization since Michael bought in, and it became Andretti Green from Team Green at the end of 2002 upon Michael's kind of pending retirement into Andretti Autosport when Michael had the full ownership of the organization, and now Andretti Global as we look to further diversify and further expand, IndyCar, IMSA, Formula E, which we've been one of the founding teams in that. Now a world championship. We ended up winning the driver's title last year with Jake Dennis. And we have the first race of our entire racing season coming this weekend from Mexico City. Extreme E, which is an off-road electric series. Indy Next, which is the old Indy Lights. So a farm system in motorsports that brings up new drivers, but also new mechanics, new engineering talent that we can have in-house that can be spread across kind of everything we do. Super Copa, which is a partnership with former IndyCar driver Michelle Jourdain in Mexico. Again, back to that talent pipeline that Andretti hopes to build from a talent management standpoint. And then our Australian supercar project and partnership with what's known as Walkinshaw Andretti United. It's Walkinshaw family, Ryan Walkinshaw, and then personally Zach Brown from his United Autosports background. So seven series, fingers crossed, hoping for Formula One. That's been, you know, front and center, trying to get to that platform, that pinnacle here in recent times, over the last few years. And then hopefully some other things down the road. NASCAR has been talked about, anything that makes sense for us, really, anything that, puts that Andretti brand on another platform in front of another audience, another fan base. Used to be Rallycross a few years ago where we had a program with Volkswagen. I'm lucky enough to be in the organization here, and really between myself and a couple of other people, revenue is the focus because sponsorship is what builds these things. You can't go racing without the proper funding in place. And those partnerships come in any different size, all the way from, you know, your big 10 plus multi-million dollar primary or title type programs, you know, all the way down to some technical partners that we have that the engineering team might see a new tool or see a new thing that could help us compete in a different series. And they come down the hall and we do outreach and try to, you know, provide whatever assets might match up with that technical investment that might be on the table. So been here since 2012, It's a great organization. Like you had said, very kind words about the Andretti family. It is a family when you work here, because you're really spending your time more so with everybody here than you are your actual family, which is interesting. But everybody has a very close relationship with one another. Nothing's off the table. It's very open dialogue, and you're kind of witness to some very historic things. So lucky to be part of the team here.
It's, you know, it's interesting that you say that, and just kind of all the names and the teams and the areas that you've talked about, because I've been in oil and gas for, call it 20 something years now, and it's a very, very relational business. And I think that's one of the aspects of why I can't ever get away from it, is because it's, mm-hmm. you do business with somebody for so long, and those relationships just kind of cultivate and foster into almost like friends. Like, you're just basically doing business with friends. And like, and one thing that I noticed when I met Andretti and St. Pete, and I got to meet like the driver management company and mm-hmm. everybody inside of the business, and you know, people had been working together for 40 years, and the sponsors were working with you guys for a long time. I felt at home, because it was this very, very relational mm-hmm. business where everybody knew your wife, your children, they knew you, they've done life with you. And I really, really appreciated that. And you guys do that really well.
Thank you.
When you talk about like revenue and title programs and things like that, like, I'm a LinkedIn guy. I love titles. I always like when I'm requesting guests, I look for new titles and, you know, interesting titles. What is the difference between somebody that's running partnerships or strategic partnerships? Like, what is the difference there?
In our world, you know, strategic partnerships, that's where it kind of runs the gamut. Cause I could be, you know, sales executive or account executive, but they're really partnerships. It's not really transactional. I think in a lot of different, not just industries, but sports marketing and other sports organizations that might not be so necessarily reliant on the sponsor side of the business as motorsports is, it's really not a transaction. If you're going to come here, if you're investing in Andretti, you're in the family. You're part of the Andretti family. That's how we feel about it. It's you know, it just seems too one-sided to just say sponsorship or, you know, transactional in that regard, or sales. I mean, it's you have a brand, or you have a company, or you have ROI goals or sales goals as an organization. Well, leverage Andretti to grow your business, and in doing that, you know, you're putting your brand alongside the legacy of the, you know, 50 plus year legacy of that Andretti brand. And whether that's to stand up a startup that's just starting to invest in marketing programs and activation programs, or if it's a, you know, longstanding partner, like unfortunately we had DHL for so many years and they've moved on now, but just taking the legacy of Andretti and the legacy of some of these other brands, it's a powerful statement. You have a story to tell. You know, and Andretti being synonymous with excellence and winning and innovation, leading edge, you know, most companies like to tell that type of story with those attributes about their brand and their platform as well. But yeah, it's just a general kind of title that, you know, all comers, we're here to be in the marketplace and see if you want to come be part of history and really leverage Andretti for your business. And then internally here, we have partnership activations team. So if I'm in the market and we put together a multi-year partnership with a sponsor, you know, XYZ, we have an entire supporting team that's there to help activate those partnerships, go through all the assets of the sponsorship, make sure all the levers are being pulled and you don't get to the end of the year and, you know, the sponsor doesn't feel like they didn't get the most out of the relationship. We have people on site that, you know, from PR and digital and content, you know, all the way down to just almost a concierge service, where you'll have someone here that's a first call on whether it's getting the best hotel rooms in a certain race market, adding people at different events, or hey, can we get a driver to this event in this race market? There's a set of customers that are going to be here, and other ideation that's done to again, just tell that Andretti sponsor story together. So long answer for the question, but yeah, at different levels, everybody at this organization sees the value in these sponsors, and to your point about the relationships, you're hanging out with friends at a racetrack. That's really what it boils down to. That's why my wife doesn't feel like I actually have a real job, because she has just seen me at races at the Indy 500 or wherever, and I just seem to be standing there talking. But it's all relationship building and connecting and networking, and that's where that true value of those dollars go to, and it helps grow business.
So it's a quick side story here. About a year ago, year and a half ago, I was asked to take on a role with a very, very large company to essentially run all of their motorsports division. And so, you know, they're their title partner and a number of racing series, you know, throughout the world. And so they kind of came to me with this thing, and I was like, hey, so hang on one second here. You want to pay me to go to Formula One races, IndyCar races, NASCAR races, take all of our clients to these events geographically to where they live, and then entertain them from the weekend at a race. And you want me to do this flying private in nice hotels and entertain them at like the thing that I basically do for fun. And they're like, yes. I was like, this is really hard.
That's perfect.
But this is what you do. Like, this is what you do for a living. So I'm going to have to talk about that more often.
No, we will. But no, it goes back to years ago when I wanted to be in motorsports. I wanted to win an Indy 500. That was really my only career goal. But going back to when I was 8, 9, 10, 12, and I would talk to my parents or my father about the history or the stats, or this is the race coming up, or here's the recap. And he always said, I wish you could put this to use. And so eventually it's like, well, this is what that looks like. So it's lucky to be in the position I'm in, for sure. And it was a kind of a windy road to get to where I am. But at the end of the day, it's all relationships. It's all making people feel comfortable, welcoming them in. I think that's been kind of our stamp on the sport. If I, just from what I've seen and what I've experienced here, it's open arms, honestly. And you know, come be part of the Andretti story. And it's not an old brand. It's not a legacy. I mean, it's a legacy brand, but there's a lot more to come. And that's what Michael's been driving at for so many years. We want to be on every major, you know, at every major motorsport venue, from Monaco to Daytona to Indianapolis to Le Mans, winning. And just carrying that forward another 50 years, and to be part of that story it's just powerful to be here and to be in the market talking to people. But a lot of times it doesn't feel like a real job. So I hope I never get one of those.
The premise of our conversation before we started. So along those lines, go back to, like, how did you get into motorsports? Every guest I've had is basically the same story, but like, when did the passion for racing, not the job, the career, but like, when did this passion that you talk about start? How?
No, great question. And I think for everybody, it's a parent's kind of connected or a fan, right? My father was a big NASCAR fan, so I grew up in a NASCAR type household, and I follow, I mean, it's, you know, that's also a passion point for sure. But along the way, I had some other introductions to, hey, this is what IndyCar looks like. This is what Formula One is. This is open wheel racing around the world. But number one, this is the Indy 500. This is the biggest sporting event in the world. Biggest single day spectator event, the history over 100 years now. But at the time was just knew some folks tangentially that would go to the race, and they'd either pick a program up or send their ticket stub or get a T-shirt. And I just decided that's the one. The Indy 500 is that's it. And so I went to school. I grew up in just outside of Buffalo, New York. I was born in Baltimore, but have some family still back there. But really coming into where I wanted to go, what I wanted to do, that passion began. When I was up there, where really we had Watkins Glen International that had the NASCAR race every August. And then you had IndyCar up in Toronto, or CART up at Toronto, since the mid 80s. And so you had some of these influences, but really it was kind of a racing desert up there. There, you know, it's not really known for that. So, so I put myself to work in what I wanted to do. The engineering piece was not going to be an option. I first wanted to look into being an aerodynamicist and going that route, but I'm just not smart enough. I'm just not, you know, number minded. And just, if I would have really applied myself, okay, maybe I would have squeaked through, but I wouldn't have been very good. So I went the kind of marketing route, the sponsorship route, because the business of motorsports was always fascinating, and how some of these big sponsorships would come together, how these manufacturer programs could come together globally, and what motorsport meant, and was really fueled by those corporate dollars. And so I came out of high school and went to school and college at Duquesne in Pittsburgh. Again, trying to connect the dots. I wanted to get away from the area, and maybe not too far. It was a few hours away. But while I was taking a tour at Duquesne in Pittsburgh, I saw the Ganassi nameplate on an alumni list, I think. And I went, oh, well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to come here and get a sports marketing degree, which was kind of rare at the time on the East Coast. I think there were a few colleges that offered sports marketing as opposed to just sports management. And so the marketing side was all about the dollars of sports. Selling, marketing, PR, and that's the route I went. At the time, as I was graduating and thinking I would just get an easy tee up and just go right into Chip Ganassi Racing, I found out through just an interview with them on an internship that didn't end up happening that they only hire MBAs. And I'm like, well, I'll just go get experience. Like, I don't have it in me, I think, yet to do that. And so that kind of ran out. I started applying for jobs and doing things much earlier than I think most people do in college, like 2 years out, but I still had so much school to go. And just by happenstance ended up, I think I interviewed with a couple of NASCAR teams, but no experience, and interviewed actually with Ferrari in, Ferrari USA, not the F1 team, but Ferrari North America out of New Jersey. And that was more of a get to know you. You have an amazing legacy and brand, and you know the goal is Ferrari F1. But if the entree to that would be through the Ferrari Corp here in the US, maybe let's go that route. But it was an interview, it was experience. That didn't end up going forward because I think I would have just ended up selling cars, which is great. But I don't think there was a path, but it was just good. Good experience to be in a room with some Italian folks and talking about where you want to be. And then finally got my first real job at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Just entry level ticketing, kind of as a liaison with sales and marketing with their sales group. And that's how everything kind of started. But for me, the passion was just you look at the sport of these, you know, gladiators that climb into these cars, and you're immortal. If you win the Indy 500, you're immediately legendary, and all the tradition and the pageantry of how that morning comes together and the race starts. And I mean, at the end of the day, somebody's life is completely different than when they strapped into that car. So either their first victory or multiple, and you just become even more of a legend. And it's just amazing to watch that happen. And, yeah, that's where it comes from. That was my real goal. So I've been lucky to be here with Andretti for 3 Indy 500 victories, which has been amazing. And you know, every year it's just that entire day is something. If they could capture that, if they could really capture that in a documentary, or as they're redoing the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum, if they could actually, I know they're going to try to capture some of that goosebump feeling, and I know they will, but nothing like being down there on the day and just seeing the day play out and the race play out by the end. It's unbelievable.
So they actually have a degree for what you do? Like a specific?
They have a, they have a degree on the generalized sports marketing and going to school in Pittsburgh. Everyone else in that program were all football, baseball, hockey. I was the only one that was not going to look at any of that and just do motorsports. And that kind of broke their system a bit because they didn't know how to talk to them. Like they're there, the whole group at the time, the program was in the School of Business at Duquesne. And the goal was to just get jobs for graduates. But they looked at me like, we don't know how to help you in racing. We don't have any relationships. We can't do that. So you're on your own, kind of. I mean, the Ganassi interview was with Tom Garfinkel at the time, who's now the president of the Dolphins and the Miami GP. And Tom at the time was a VP, I think, with Chip on the sponsorship side. But it was just kind of a throwaway interview. It was very nice and kind and was able to go through what my goals, what I'm working on. But they only hired MBAs. So, no, it's not a specific degree to motorsports marketing at all. It's just a generalization of you know, why companies spend money in sports and what those look like, sports issues, that sort of thing. So I know that there's probably some more, like there's some other motorsports degrees you can get, business and motorsport degrees, just locally here in Indy. But it wasn't specific to racing at all. It was just generalized of sponsorship and sports was the focus. So, and it was kind of nice in a way because I excelled at it because even all the work I did, they didn't have any background as to how well it was done or not, or what that looked like, because they didn't have any experience in racing. And that's all I talked about. So who knows? I probably skated through and they just assumed it was good because I just was passionate about what I was working on, but they didn't have any speakers we had or anybody that any internships. There was no motorsports at all. Even with the tie to Ganassi being, I think he was a graduate 1982 class, I think, but, oh, well, it worked out really, really well. So
does in your world, like you're at the end of the day, you're in sales, everything. Yes. Revenue sales. And I correct. Like, this is my bag right here. I love this. Is this, I'm trying to figure out how to word this. You're like your career development is around like revenue, like the ultimate goal of like this particular place that you arrive at, like, does this place you in an operational leadership role? Like, you know, you said the guy with Chip Ganassi ended up being the president of a race of Miami, but like, where does this role like go 20 years from now? Like, where do you excel through the food chain?
I 20 years, I mean, the way our structure is, we have a chief commercial officer, and then it's really just down to revenue partnerships. I mean, it's, I think down the road, it's just from the experience of it, I'd like to say I'd be across, because right now my focus and our focus really, just the way that the partnerships and the other race teams line up, IndyCar, Formula E, Extreme E, and then now with our acquisition of Wayne Taylor Racing, the beginning of last year, IMSA. You know, we don't really touch necessarily the Indy Next programs or, you know, with Waukesha, I've gotten to know their sponsors and things, but unless I come across a relationship that's somebody wanting to activate in Australia, you know, it's not that I'm doing a lot of outreach starting with me for the Australian program, because that kind of runs on its own. But in 20 years, I don't know, could it be a president role? Could it be something that's more operational and, you know, marketing sponsorship based? It kind of just depends. I'd say there's only a handful of us in motorsports that have necessarily been here from what I've seen, you know, a decent amount of time. You know, we have friends on the NASCAR side. You know, there's a few folks just that, you know, in the industry. But yeah, it kind of depends. In Australia, we have our team GM was elevated to CEO, and he was the only kind of team principal in Australian supercars that was from the commercial background. He wasn't a operational or competition representative. So it's a rarity that you kind of see that. I think Zach Brown's another one. He comes from the marketing, from the sales and sponsorship side, and he's the head of McLaren. Everybody else typically is somebody that's come up on the engineering side and the operational side. So, you know, part of me just wants to stay flat out in this role and bringing new deals together and just getting to enjoy it on race weekends and get to see kind of your work come to life on the racetrack, which is probably one of the coolest things. And we've been lucky, and I've been lucky to be part of those 500 victories and other accomplishments where the work that I've put in has been part of that. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I'm happy doing. But who knows what the future holds or what succession looks like or what that is. I think sometimes if you get elevated or put into some different things, you kind of lose that, not what you're passionate for, but what you're supposed to be doing. You're not on the field every day, right? You're kind of looking after different parts of the business that might not be as exciting, but are equally or more crucial. It's in a way you kind of have your blinders on and you're out just trying to find new partners. So that's refreshing as well. And you're able to stay kind of in your lane and get to focus on that. But who knows? I want to keep selling and want to keep winning.
If you could write your ticket today, where would you go? Would you take a head of commercial? Would you take a team principal? Or would you stay in partnerships and revenue? Like I love sales. I live in this world.
Yeah. No, I think partnerships and revenue is just where the strength is at, because relationships are my strength, I think. And you need that obviously at all levels. But no, kind of what I'm doing now, it's what I do, right? It's what I get up and go do. You know, I'd certainly love to see the Formula One piece for us happen, because, you know, I haven't done that yet personally. That is the pinnacle. It would be exciting to see that all just come together. But, you know, who knows in the future with NASCAR, but that's kind of the advantage of an Andretti, is because we're so diverse, you get to touch all these things and you're not just down one path or have one, you know, piece of racing property to sell, let's say. So I don't know. I think about that question a lot, and if, you know, the right opportunity internally here comes up, or if there's an opportunity across, hopefully some growth that might happen with us. I mean, it's, I'm kind of open to it, but also a team player in the trenches. And we kind of have our core team here that, you know, we were just out in CES in Las Vegas, and my colleague Greg and Doug, it's kind of what we do. Like, we just have our team and we do well together, just getting in front of people and getting them excited as we are about what the Andretti platform is. So
for whatever it's worth, I think, you know, I've been so much more a fan of Formula One throughout my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I've had the chance in the last two or so years to spend way more time in IndyCar and some of the support series leading into mm-hmm. that. And I just have this like entrepreneurial gut feeling that while we have all this like great drive to survive momentum in racing, I think that's probably helping everyone in racing.
We've seen it. Sure.
I would say that, you know, dealing with fans, you know, on a more micro level, I feel like they get to Formula One and they feel like, while the glitz and the glam and the excitement and the big names and the big fashion stuff is exciting, but when it comes to the racing part, it's like, it's very predictable.
Yep.
And the more that I've been around the IndyCar side, it's more of a driver series. So this is always like in the US, you know, this, like, what's the difference between the two? And it's like, one's a, you know, creator, one's a driver series, or one's a constructor series. And, you know, and I think when that kind of clicks with people, they kind of start to gravitate towards IndyCar, because it's like, you know, like a Grosjean. I mean,
he immediately was the most popular driver, and he hadn't done, before 22, he hadn't done a full IndyCar season, but IndyCar did a fan survey and he was immediately the most popular driver, right? And
exactly.
Candidly, from when we have people at events or we're hosting or prospecting, you know, Driver Survive has helped in the fact that a lot of people's first, you know, introduction to any type of motorsport is Drive to Survive. And, you know, we have a couple ties in our series there, but then you embed them on the IndyCar side with us and kind of take them through the full, not only Andretti experience, but just the access that that IndyCar provides. People walk away just, you know, blown away by it, and they had no idea. Most people, even motorsport people that, you know, maybe, you know, they watch Formula One or they, you know, they're NASCAR people. They come to their first IndyCar race after so many years and they kind of walk out wide eyed, like, this is a pretty amazing platform. How is this not front and center in kind of the U.S. sporting culture, you know, in a big way? We have so many great events, street events. You added Nashville a couple of years ago, and then this year it's our finale and we're going to be running down Broadway. So it blows people away, but to the point, it is a driver's series. It's a spec series, so everybody have the same cars, engines. Everything's the same except down to the damper development, and we do all that in-house. And then we license out some of that. We sell that know-how to Meyer Shank as a sister team, if you will, or a satellite team. They're, you know, we get some R&D help, but it's great to get. I always love getting new people at IndyCar events, no matter where it is. Doesn't even have to be kind of one of the more glitz and glamour races. You can come to Iowa, and I did that with a couple people this summer, and they just were like, I have no words for this. Like, because then, you know, you're in our environment, you're with us. Here's Michael. Oh, drivers were over here. Come on up into our transporter and come right out to the grid prior to the race and just stand with the team for the anthems, and just people looking at me like, this is amazing. So, you know, if we could give that experience to more people, we'd love to do that.
I'll tell you a story. And this has a lot to do with you, actually. So, you know, we got the call the day before the St. Louis race here. And or the worldwide technology race.
Yep.
To come. And so, you know, I'm like, you know, we're all sitting in the living room, and I was like, I knew we had tons of plans for the weekend. I didn't have any. And, you know, I was like, hey, who's free tomorrow? And I was like, who wants to go to the race? Everybody was busy except for my daughter, who's not like, she's not a race. She's a dad yeah. fan. And yep. so she's like, I'm free. Let's go. And so, you know, we go to the race and, you know, we get to hang out with you and, you know, get to just experience it. But like, you know, she gets a Colton Herta jersey, which, by the way, she's a massive fan, and she wears that thing like every other day to Perfect. School. And,
Thank you.
You know, she's Thanks like, for that. She's craving more of these jerseys. And like, she wants to go to races now, like very, very often. And she was like instantly a fan because, you know, like, even as a normal ticket holder, you can like, I mean, you can get within yeah. 5 feet of a car, you know, and yeah. the drivers, they're around you like a fan. Yeah. And that just the level of fan engagement, even for a 15-year-old girl that has zero interest in racing, is now like, yeah. she sits with me every race day. She watches the races, you know, she goes to the store and she sees a shirt with the race car on it. She gets it. And like, you know, she sits down with me in my office here and she's like, okay, you know, here are the IndyCar races for the season. Which ones can we go to? Like, I like St. Pete. I like, you know, California. Can we go to those? And I was like, sure. Time to That's spend cool. one-on-one with my daughter at a race. Holy cow. But like, yeah, you're right. Like, that level of engagement is just, it's like, it's almost intoxicating to a fan. And, you know, if you're not a fan, you are a fan. And if you are a fan, you just like, you yeah. can't help yourself, but want more after that.
No, it's, and we've been lucky with that. I mean, it's, and I think each series has their own element of that, but just with IndyCar, just people somehow they walk away, or if they're lucky enough to, you know, ride in a two seater, you know, when Mario did that, or if not, you really put somebody in the driver's seat, and that gives people an entirely new appreciation for what is really on the line and what the talent of are these teams and drivers that compete. And it's just, that's one of the best things, is just to see new people just take it all in. And it's like drinking from a fire hose, I think, a lot of times. But yeah, I mean, I posted people a decade ago that nothing ever worked out or we weren't able to put something together, but they'll still text, you know, when we win races, or they'll reach out and say, hey, I saw this in the, you know, in whatever store, or hey, I thought of you guys, Andretti popped up on this show, you know, this or that, and still watches the races. I mean, people just get turned on to it almost immediately. It's rare. I mean, not everybody does that, but I think, you know, they're very rare that somebody kind of walks out and just doesn't have at least something they want to follow, whether it's the driver and their personalities, or they tune into Indy, or it just kind of depends. But it's exciting to see that, and wish you could bottle that and provide that to everybody. And just, you know, F1 has those three races here in the US, but hey, we have 18 races and they're pretty affordable. And like you said, just having a general access, you're really in the mix. And then when you're with a team, you're with us, or you have the credential and the hospitality piece, you're just that one step higher. And it's that equivalent of a sideline pass in the NFL. I mean, you're right up against it. So it's a great platform. And, you know, the fact it's a spec series, I mean, they've really, not that it's randomized, but, you know, out of the 33 Indy 500 starters we've seen, right, 30 can win, 28 of them can win. And at any given IndyCar weekend, probably out of the 27 cars, 20 to 22 of them can win that race. And, you know, whether it's off strategy or pure skill, it's there's no better product, honestly, on the racetrack. So it's good. But that being said, excited to be part of Formula E, where that's also randomized. It's a spec series or just electric powertrains. Anything can happen in those events. They're mostly street circuits. They're starting to move to permanent facilities now, which is great. Extreme E is totally different, being off-road, kind of climate-affected parts of the world, calling attention to, you know, really what we have to do as a world, as a society, to help kind of turn back time a little bit and take care of the earth. Not the best, unfortunately, the spectator event piece of that's really tough, especially when you race. Years ago, we raced in Greenland, and there's only 500 people that are in the town where we're racing. So you're trying to minimize the impact of the race being there. You're bringing your own utensils and taking them out. There's no trash. All the cars are moved around on the ship, the St. Helena, around the world. And then, of course, IMSA now, with all the technology and manufacturers and just that whole sports car scene, not only in the US, but globally. It's, you know, each one kind of has their different different attraction, but certainly just here, stateside in North America, IndyCar is still kind of unfortunately, still a hidden gem in a lot of ways, except for some of these big events that certainly get mainstream attention. So I encourage everybody to get to one this year.
Yeah, my goal this year is to hit an IMSA race too. We've had Dallara, you know, we've gotten pretty close to Dallara over the last year, and you know, I just having these guests that are part of their IMSA development, and you know, they just keep telling me, it's like, come to the 24 hours of Daytona, and I'm like, what do you do for 24 hours at a race? Like, how do you actually do that as a fan?
Yeah,
you know, that's $100 bucks for a ticket, and you just, you know, you go back to your hotel room, take a nap, watch it on TV, then go back to the track. And I was like, I gotta try that.
or you just gotta go the whole 24. Those are my favorite. I haven't done a 24-hour race. Candidly, I did the 12 hours of Sebring, and we did Petit Le Mans, which is a 10-hour race with our new Wayne Taylor partnership, and it's been great. But you think about that endurance, where in the old days it was take care of the car, you know, go at 80 or 90%. Now it's a sprint race for the entire race, because everyone's so close and the reliability's there, where you really can't get behind. And if you do, you still have a lot of work to do. I mean, there will be yellow flags and things that can help you catch up, but it's, you don't like take it easy. You're flat out for these races, and it's amazing to watch these restarts, especially at some of these venues that don't have permanent lighting. You know, Daytona has now more so some permanent lighting, but not really in the infield. And you have Sebring, where you're just in the middle of the night in the darkness on a flat track. That's, you know, one of the bumpier ones in the world. I mean, it's just, it's, that's also next level, where again, people walk away and just can't believe what they just saw. And the technology is amazing. The cars are amazing. It's exciting to be back in that, in a top level with GTP, and hopefully things go well, we can get to Le Mans sooner rather than later, because, you know, Michael and Mario drove there. Marco did, I think Marco did once as well. But all with that goal is Andretti to be not the, at the top level on the podium in all these major motorsport events globally. So, yeah, you'll let me know which IMSA race you're targeting.
Yeah, I'll have to text back and forth and figure out which one to go to. I feel like the more people I get on this show, I love competition. And anytime I start talking to people about a series that's even more competitive, I'm kind of like, wait, where is that?
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, and then I have the F1 sticker shock, and I see, you know, the 24 hours of Daytona is like $117 for a ticket. I'm like, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. Or the F1 thing now, go to Europe. It's cheaper to go to Europe now and pick out one of those and do the hotels and the flights. And not to say, don't get me wrong, it's amazing they're so popular now in the U.S. I mean, that's to pull off that Vegas event was something for them to do that and actually do it the right way, where you're not just kind of racing onto a hairpin on the strip. You're going to race for most of the strip. That's a big part of that track. I commend them for pulling that off. And that's only going to mean great things and years to come, but man, that's a tough deal. So, some of those old school F1 circuits like Imola or Monza, Hungary, you know, it's, that's bucket list stuff. You should look at that too.
Well, we're planning a family trip to Italy next year. So I've started my Duolingo training, so I can actually go visit teams and you know, actually communicate to people, but that's part of our kind of strategic planning is, can we get into Monza and coordinate this trip and kids' time off to line up with that.
That would be good,
of course, the Le Mans. So I might have to wait for you guys to do the Le Mans before I schedule that one.
You talk about the Indy 500 being the biggest in the world single day. I think they're not, you don't count Le Mans because that's also as big with 400,000 people, but over the 24 hours. And that's again, to be part of that would be really amazing. So hopefully we can get that all put together in the future too.
So I was actually, before we started this, I was going through your LinkedIn bio. It always just like, I always do that right before I get on the show and you actually worked for Rusty Wallace's team?
I did. Yeah, that was just before I joined Andretti. So I had left Vegas. I went through a couple of other roles with some agencies, one of which managed Dario Franchitti and Dan Weldon at the time. And current agency still manages Sergio Perez and the Weldon boys, which is really cool. But after that, I knew I had to be in Charlotte or Indy. I moved and just worked from home for this agency at the time, called CSS Stellar, which is now GP Sports Management, and did that for a bit, but knew I'd have to be just geographically in one or the other. And so I went to Charlotte and, parted ways with that agency and reached out kind of mid season. It would have been middle of 2010, end of summer, kind of 2010 ish, got to know the Rusty Wallace Racing folks, which was just at the time, NASCAR Xfinity team that was owned by Rusty. We had a Toyota partnership. 5-Hour Energy was a partner on Steve Wallace, which was Rusty's son. And then we had Brendan gone for a time, and then he moved on, and it was Michael Annette for the 2011 Xfinity season. So it was kind of a weird time, I think, for NASCAR, because that team, Rusty Wallace's, went away at the beginning of 12 because 5-Hour Energy went to the Cup Series. Kind of around that time that you saw Great Clips and Dollar General and some of these other big Xfinity level focused brands kind of take that same investment or maybe a little bit more than that investment, and then they can go up to the Cup level and get a half of a season or a third of a season. So it was unfortunate timing, but Rusty was just a great personality, a great guy to work for, and come into the office accessible, you know, have him call partners if needed, pull him into meet and greets. Like he is who he is on, you know, the Motor Racing Network when you hear him, or you would have seen him on television with ESPN because we'd be hosting people at races and he's up in the booth and I'd be able to bring people up to the ESPN booth and between commercial breaks because he was the host. He wasn't calling the race a lot of times.
Yeah.
So I was able to bring people in and just see that side of it. But he's Rusty Wallace. I mean, he's a legend and had a great career and, you know, kind of in a way like Michael in a way won a championship, won a lot of big races, like was one of those guys and just one of the top three in that sport for so long. And even to this day, it's a shame the team went away for sure. But yeah, I don't think, you know, we did one Daytona 500 together. I wasn't there, but it was the 2011 Daytona 500. And it was exciting to kind of, that was one of the first big events that I had as a teammate been part of. And it went well, finished 20th, didn't wreck, like didn't get caught up in the big one. It was actually pretty respectable. It was a great, great day. But unfortunately by the end of the year with some sponsorship moving on, you know, a little too late in the game, probably a little too early in my career. I still stayed on, you know, into 2012 into it probably was April or May. If I wanted to guess whether it was selling PSA deals, personal services deals with Rusty or trying to put Steve Wallace back in a, whether it was a truck series entry or some other things, but they consolidated and Rusty kind of went the other way. And once you were out, you know, that's, I think they've done some other late model stuff and a few other things, but they unfortunately didn't come back. And that was before the time of the charters and the Cup Series. And I don't know, I think all things being equal, if there was a way to get to the Cup Series, that would have been exciting, but it takes sponsorship. And unfortunately they kind of moved on and that those middle tier Xfinity teams kind of went by the wayside or they're still there in the various forms. So, but yeah, Rusty's a great guy, great family too. His wife, Patty, worked with Greg Wallace and then Steven was the driver, Katie, you know, everybody was involved with the team. So yeah, about a year and a half is kind of what that was for me, but it was my real thrown in deep end selling sponsorship and we're going racing and we're doing every race kind of thing. I probably went to 4 or 5 during my time. But yeah, that was next level. And, you know, go wander the shop at night and see some old Martinsville grandfather clocks, just, you know, Rusty, I think won 7 or 8 of them. And I think they were all still packaged up in their original cardboard box. Like just, I mean, we have that not problem, but we have that issue here with a lot of stuff in the back that's like, what's this? Oh, here's just a random Indy Lights trophy from Michigan or, you know, like stuff like that, which would be cool.
Yeah.
Going on a scavenger hunt. But yeah, it was a great, great time with those guys in Mooresville.
On that same kind of vein of like conversation, you've had a pretty like exciting career around motorsports. Like what's been your pinch me moment throughout that course? You've been with some legendary names.
Yeah, I mean, it's simple stuff. I mean, obviously the 500 and winning those has been unbelievable, like at its own level. But just simple stuff where you're at a track on Friday and you're having lunch and you're having kind of deep strategy discussions on whatever business topic, sponsorship with a Michael or, you know, Mario sits down or just generally the month of May here when you're there for a practice day and everybody's under the same tent and, you know, they're all competing, but we're all there just talking as friends, but, you know, about the business or otherwise. And, that kind of stuff is just, you know, it's simple kind of passive things, but you know, when you're in the business, it just means a lot to be at this level. I mean, you're on the field, right? And so just any small things like that. I mean, randomly being, you know, sat next to Mario and having just an open discussion about, you know, what's happening in the NASCAR world, for instance, or if he could still, which he could, hop in one of those cup cars and qualify it and then have him kind of come back and say, yeah, but I'd rather, it's the open wheel, that's the real race car, that kind of thing. But
yeah,
he's amazing too. So it's, so yeah, there's a lot of pinch me moments during the year. But yeah, it's just being on the field, just still being around, you know, it's cool to be here.
What in that career did you not expect? Like what in your like career where you're like, wow, I didn't see that come in, or I didn't see that part of it?
Let's see. That's a good question. I
This
probably
is
didn't
how.
expect to really settle down. Honestly, probably I was expected to just be totally transient. And I used to have a 2006 Saturn Ion that I could fit every worldly possession into. And I just, I was laid off, or things contracted, or things changed. And, the only role that I've ever knowingly left, I left to Las Vegas so I could move up another rung in motorsports. But the other ones has always been a contraction or a change of management or something. So I just always expected to just be living in a studio apartment everywhere I go. But no, I met my wife in Charlotte and her two girls, and we've been married, we're gonna be married 10 years now in March, and she puts up with me, which is a real miracle. She moved here. We had to move to Indy right after we got, or I moved to Indy right after we got married, and she joined at the end of the following year. So we were long distance for a bit. And yeah, she has her own business in HR consulting, and I get to do this. And so she travels a lot, I travel a lot, and it's just, that's how it is. But it's she's self-made and does her things. And we have family that live close, and the grandson who's here now in Indy. And yeah, didn't quite expect that, because I just thought I would just be out and about, and, well, I don't want to say eating ramen every night, but just didn't see like owning a house, like anything like that, because I just expected to get into this and just kind of bounce around, or at a moment's notice, kind of fingers snapped and I end up in another city. And I think generally that's what it is if you work in sports for the most part. And that's what I tell people, is you got to be mobile to get to where you want to be. But to actually settle down a little bit, I didn't expect that at all. So.
You're like the reacher of motorsports. I should say you were like the reacher of motorsports. You just
I gotta watch that still. I know what you mean. I've seen the movies with Tom Cruise, but I haven't seen the show yet.
Oh, the TV show's great.
Yeah, I've heard. It's on our list. But
So that's actually where I'm headed after we get done with this. My wife and I, again, we're both like just don't ever stop moving. And like we hit these points where we eat well, we take care of ourselves. I've had a couple of F1 performance coaches on the show, and they help me with nutrition and diet and taking care of myself and stuff. And then we hit these periods of time during the winter where you wake up, it's dark, you like get done with work, it's dark, it's always dark, it's always cold. And like we just start packing the house with like crap. We have two boxes of donuts upstairs. We have chips, and like all her and I have done for the last 2 nights is we go up, we turn Reacher on, and we just eat crappy food, and we wake up in the morning and we're like, wow, we should not do that tonight. And
Oh,
then
man, you
I
should
like
do that
noon,
once a week.
by noon we're like, we should do that again. That was fun.
Yeah. So we'll do that. We'll binge a lot. Like, I'll get home and just sit, and we'll just, try to turn your brain off. Then my other thing I do is, if I, coming out of this week, I was in Vegas, and or a race week where I get back and there's an open weekend, and I'll go to bed at 8 or 9 on a Friday and not get up till 4 or 5 p.m. on Saturday, that kind of thing. So
I haven't done
that,
that since high school.
yeah, a lot of people are lucky enough, not lucky enough to be able to do that, but I. It's kind of my superpower is sleeping that long. So it's like hibernating like a bear. So I think tomorrow might be one of those. But I'll still like peek around like 9 a.m. or something to look at my phone. I mean, it's not that I'm unreachable, but you talk to my boss and he'd say that I have been in the past, where he'll send a text on a Saturday morning and I won't reply till 6 o'clock at night after I've just woken up and grabbed a shower. So yeah, it's
What
good to do that every once in a while.
in your career, what like have you ever had adversity moments, like moments in your career where you're having to overcome something? And I always feel like this is a silly question with salespeople because we always have goals and objectives, and every year they seem impossible, and then you just like you blinder down and you go. But have you had any of those moments in your career?
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, around like along the way, when I did the 3 years in Vegas, and then I moved to Pennsylvania, joined an agency, and was and that changed around, and I was laid off 4 months into that. So I had to, it's the summer of 2009. So I like was on the path, hopefully, to getting where I wanted to be. And I had to go home in Buffalo, and I lived in my mom's basement for most of that summer into September. So it was a good probably May through early May, late April through mid to late September. And I'm like, this is the end. Like, this is it. Like, I went and it failed, and here I am. And it was just like, it was a dark, like, time of just, I don't know what I'm going to do now. Cause that's, I put all my chips on the table for that, for the career. And I mean, part of it's probably luck, but I ended up getting picked up by that driver management agency and kind of working on the side. And then that grew into a full-time thing. So that's when I put myself, knowing just in case something happened, which it ended up doing, that I'd be in Charlotte or Indy, but I was in Charlotte. That's when the Rusty Wallace thing, but for a while there, I was just like, I just don't know. Like, it's not that I wasn't working. I was chasing things. Like, it was bad time of year, cause it was just after May that year. And usually people don't hire until you get into the off season, keeping up with relationships. That's how I got to know kind of some of the Andretti leadership a few years prior. I've kept in touch with them. So when the Rusty Wallace thing went away in 2012, I went to Baltimore to help them with the Grand Prix of Baltimore. So I was only out of a job really for a month or two before they were trying to pull off this massive street-like event, which wasn't the Vegas F1 event, but at the time for IndyCar, it was like the Vegas F1 of IndyCar, trying to race down Pratt Street and around Oriole Park and where the Ravens play, that whole thing. And that's how I got pulled onto that. It was in the middle of the NASCAR discussions that Andretti was having with Dodge. So I was already in Charlotte. So I think the thought was, okay, we get the NASCAR piece with Dodge and SRT. I'm already there. But even then I would have been like, can I come to Indy? Cause I'm an Indy, like the Indy 500 is why I want to be here. But that summer of 2009 was just, it wasn't the best, but you know, to pull out of that and then end up here. And yeah, I remember sitting on my mom's couch watching that Indy 500. It was Elio's third, and just like, I don't know what's next. I don't know what's going to pull me out of this. And you keep punching away. And then it was 5 years later, we won with Hunter Ray, and that was my first. And it was like, it was kind of a, it was cool to come out of that. But for months there, it was like, I don't know what's next. I have no idea.
Just like, I've been around business for a long time, you know, and I think the question you always ask, like in the corporate setting, is always, what's your objective? And I think in the business world, it's always, you know, like, I got to get a promotion. I got to be a director, a VP, a senior VP, blah, 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 blah. Every time I talk to somebody in motorsports, they're so like satisfied with the team's win. Like, we are winning the 500. We are winning a championship. And like that objective is so crystal clear, but also universally accepted as success. Like, you know, when you work for a company and you sell a big contract, the only people that care are the salespeople and like the executive team. Everyone else is like, oh, sales, they're dramatic and they're prima donnas. And, you know, I don't care if they get this deal or not. Whereas like in motorsports, it's like the receptionist cares that you win the 500, you know, everyone just is like, you're just as happy as the driver. And that to me is
correct.
Such an amazing concept that I just, to this day, I don't understand why it's not more widely studied in other businesses, to just like, hey, Alex, can I come by?
I can see those moments, Super Bowl moments and things in the Olympics. And it's like, I've felt that.
It's wild to me.
Like, that's kind of the cool part of the job. And I've been lucky to be here for the successes. But it's like, I know what that feels like. Like, not in a pretentious way, but just, you know, that's, it just means so much. Because you know the backstory of it. You know what got that driver there, or got kept that driver there, or attracted this talent, or what happened on the sponsorship of that entry. And you know, who's behind that? I mean, it's just, it can be a magical thing, honestly. So, everybody shares in that. And that's what I think that this organization really promotes, and that's why a lot of times, you know, you do get some turnover, but there's a lot of people that have been here going back to the Team Green days, like that won the Indy 500 with Jacques Villeneuve in 95. There's a couple people still here. Like there are some 30-year employees going back to predating Michael by 10 years, that kind of thing. So it's a lucky position to be in for sure. But yeah, to your point, I mean, definitely I get revved up when I, you know, you put a deal together or you're part of a deal coming together and you know what that means, but you know, we luckily get that kind of celebration beyond that. If the right things happen at the racetrack or, you know, this year wasn't in London when we won the Formula E driver championship, but it's a world championship now from the FIA and, you know, have the t-shirt at home, was watching from like, I'm like cooking a steak on the hibachi out on my patio, watching it on CBS on my phone as it's happening and it's stressful. Yeah. And it's just, but we're all part of that. And that's the culture. It's, you know, the teams win, everybody wins. And it's, you know, we do our Taco Tuesdays, but just it's kind of a rare career to be able to have multiple wins, right? Like actually feel things like that. It's pretty cool.
Well, for the social proof of your role, all of my experiences with you and your team and like hospitality have been some really pivotal moments in my career. And I'll share that stuff offline with you, but like,
that's cool.
This concept of like partnerships, I think, is a huge misnomer, and I wish more companies would pay attention to this from the revenue side, because mm-hmm. I think a lot of businesses immediately say, if I put my logo on that car, that's what I'm buying here, and I just that 5%. First year that I went to St. Pete with you guys and I sat down in hospitality and I was eating lunch around a bunch of people I didn't know. And, you know, the fascinating thing is I'm always studying and, mm-hmm. you know, you just start eating and, you know, as like, as humans, it's like, what do you do? Why are you here? What's going on? And all of a sudden, you know, my wife is sitting with me and all of a sudden it's like, what do you do? What do you do? I do this. I do this. I need mm-hmm. that. And like, all of a sudden, I'm watching business take place and, speed you know, dating. my wife's exactly. getting customers and like, it's like, what, this is fascinating to me, you know? And like, if only like more companies knew the sales tool, the revenue generating tool that event creates is just wild. Cause you've broken all the sales resistance down by going to an event where you're all really passionate and interested.
Yeah.
And then
it's like we say, how do you make people emotional about your brand? I mean, branding is such a big part of this, but honestly, to your point, you know, the more impact, the more ROI comes from those networking, those relationships, giving that experience to your customers or prospects that they'll be talking about for the rest of their lives. And also you have a captive audience for a day or 2 days of a race weekend, you bring them in. You know, you see this with a lot of these technology companies now in the sport that, you know, it's technology relevant, but, or technologically relevant, I should say, but they're at races, they do, you know, lunch and learns and tech days going in and then let's have fun. Let's go to the race. And, you know, this is what this is. It's, you know, it's definitely all relationships, but the business to business side of what we do is probably the most critical piece. You know, you're here with Andretti, you're here in IndyCar, you're here in IMSA, you're here in Formula E to drive business for your organization. And the branding, certainly, you know, it's one of the last things, honestly, we talk about, although we know that, again, you make somebody emotional about the brand that they've built or they're in charge of, and that's how you connect it to the sport itself. So, you know, it's, you're really buying, you're investing in, you're part of history. You know, you're part of the family. So it's an honor to be here and work on it and appreciate the kind words on the family and everybody. I know that'll mean a lot. That's good to hear that too, because that's what we try to promote and that's what our goal is for our environment.
It feels genuine. It really does. I mean, it just, I don't like to flatter. I don't like to make people feel good. Mm-hmm. I just like to be honest mm-hmm. with people. And it just, I've experienced something around your coworkers that I don't experience often. And I find it a lot in oil and gas, but like the relationships, mm-hmm. the conversations feel very genuine and, you know, not, it never feels opportunistic in any way. And honestly, like at any point in time, if I'm at a place in my, in this company, I'd stroke a check to your team in a second to put my salespeople in a room.
Yeah.
Like that was, because it was, I mean, there was more business happening over that food than I've experienced week long sales trips. It was really incredible to witness that.
And what we found, candidly, I mean, you know, it's not the cheapest thing to go racing, right? As a partner, as a corporate partner. So typically the guests, you know, and the sponsor guests of ours and their guests, they're C-level people, they're decision makers that, you know, it's rare that a lot of times, you know, the marketing managers or the sponsorship coordinators can put together, you know, a deal at our level, even from the lower end. So you have a C-level audience, captive audience inside of our environment during these race weekends. Some races are more popular than others, but then again, some of the ones, I mean, on our calendar, you get more time with other partners that just happen to be there and, you know, trying to do a few things kind of cross team. We want to meet, you know, a Rahal partner or a Penske partner, you know, some of that stuff. You try to open the paddock a bit, and we have great relationships. While those rivalries, we have great relationships with the other teams and the other kind of marketing folks on those teams, because we're all here trying to, you know, lift the same boat, right? Lift the same ship. We're all in it together too. So, you know, that's why a lot of poaching doesn't happen. If we're racing against a team in a certain series, we won't reach out to those partners, let's say, because, you know, but if we're not, if it's, you know, something in NASCAR or something in Europe or wherever it might be, or if we're approached, that's different. But it's, you know, we're all trying to make this all work. And so it's definitely a close community, especially in IndyCar, but you see that in IMSA and I think everywhere else.
Well, Alex, man, I will let you get to your hibernation sleep for the weekend.
Yeah, we're coming up on it.
I appreciate you coming on, telling your story and just taking time out of your day. Seriously, I'm always blown away by how people will give an hour of their day to come on and tell their story. And
been a lot to be here. Glad we could put this together, Ryan. Thanks for asking me. So,
hey, anytime.
I'll send this off to our team to make sure I said all the right things.
You did. Nothing felt weird to me. So I really appreciate you coming on the show and giving us your time and telling us your story.
No, sounds good, Ryan. Thanks so much. I appreciate it, brother.